Isn't that the? Oh no, it's not the candy bar in Caddyshack. That's a Baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth. Yeah, I was actually just about to suggest, John, you have a like community pool outside. Maybe tomorrow you can throw a couple
Baby
of
Ruth
like,
in
Snickers
it?
Or yeah, some Baby Ruth in there, or
you drop
know,
a
some
Ruth.
Sort of chocolate bar in the pool.
That could definitely stir up some conflict. I would be into that. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Or like a Snickers. And like you'll get a nut that comes out and some caramel, so it's going to look like pee.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, man. And I'm just sitting there naked eating mounds. What?
And the security guy is just like walking
chocolate
door
all
door
over you.
Out, like,
covered
like
in chocolate.
In there. Yeah. Your neighbor's like, oh, yeah, maybe it's the guy that screams at the top of his lungs at 2 in the morning.
I am shocked that nobody has knocked on my door. Like, even like let alone, like, I think there's people next to me. I'm not really sure. But, like, at least the people above and below me should be like, what the actual fuck is that kid doing screaming at Overcooked 2 at 2 in the morning?
Oh, Jesus. Striking out on the show. Just fuck.
Oh, man. Spencer struck me out so many times last night. Jeez. He was on fire.
So let's just get into the show.
Can I ask you guys a question, though?
If you must.
Where's Caleb? Caleb!
Sorry.
What?
Abby! Oh my god. Make
Diane,
stupid.
Please. Diane, please. I'm a scientist.
Didn't take like that. He just was like,
the Diane. Caves! We have to go to the caves!
The right, caves will save us! Please.
The director's just like, what the fuck was that?
Caleb, don't make me ask you twice.
Oh my god.
Just the start of Nicolas Cage, like, trying to do very, like, theatrical, weird shit. Okay.
Good night, Caleb. Good night, Mom.
Well, alright. Welcome back to Collector's Corner. Holy shit. It's a show where one of us dusts off a film from a physical media collection. We put it in the Blu-ray player to watch, and then we get together to discuss what we liked, what we didn't like, and why we even bought the film in the first place. This week, I actually decided to challenge the dudes and myself and kind of come up with specific categories for the next couple of episodes. And this is the first one, and this is John's week, and he decided to go with the category of guilty pleasure movies, just kind of like films with mid to low reviews that, you know, he still loves and appreciates. And yeah, that's why
there's
we saw the poll
those.
For The Mummy and Knowing, because both don't, you know, they don't have the best reviews out there. And I had never seen The Mummy, and Nate had never seen Knowing, so oh shit.
One of you guys won, in quotes. I don't know. Yeah, dude, fucking Knowing, 2009. What a year to be alive. Nate, I guess I'm not surprised that you hadn't seen this. It's not really in your wheelhouse. It's one of those just like Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage movies. And honestly, if I hadn't watched it just like randomly, my mom, I think, got it like either at, I'm assuming like Redbox. I think Redbox was a thing in 2009. And if I hadn't seen it then, I probably never would have watched this movie until like me and Spencer developed our obsession with Nicolas Cage. I don't know when it would have happened, but, you know, my background with this movie was I watched it at my lake house on a really small little box TV late at night. It was probably raining with my mom, and we literally just talked about this. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do Knowing. And she's like, oh, I'm like, you remember when we watched this thing? Like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, you don't understand the impact this film has had on me.
She didn't remember. Like, you know that.
You don't understand. Like, you thought you just rented a movie, we watched it, move on with our lives? No. No, 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 no.
It changed my fucking life.
No, this movie is... It should not have had the impact that it really did, but I've seen this movie at least 10 times. At least. It's
okay.
Like I said, guilty pleasures. There's a reason why it was on that list. The Mummy, I've probably seen that 5 or 6 times, but this is definitely more of the guilty pleasure. Just purely because it's Nicolas Cage being himself, and it's a disaster movie, and I had a huge obsession with those for quite some time.
That's true. It does tick some boxes for you.
Boxes.
I saw Knowing in theaters in 2009. Like, it came out in March of 2009, and I went and saw it at this like really small art house theater up where I was skiing. And I remember going with my dad. I was probably like 13 or so. I was 13, 14, And I remember being pretty into the movie, and then I vividly remember the ending. We'll get into it, but the ending just pissed me off, and I just like got up and like wanted to leave the theater at like the very end.
I just, as a 13-year-old, God, I'm offended.
Yeah, I was just like, I wasn't really offended. I was just pissed because the movie just goes in such a weird direction in the third act, and it just caught me off guard. I always remember that, and I think I had watched it maybe one or two times, like maybe on TV in the years following, and you know, I've always kind of liked it and thought it was like a fun movie, but it's been, you know, it's been a long time since I've watched this from start to finish. So that's why when you picked it, I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And also because, like you said, Nate had never seen this movie. And
Before we get into that, I do want to, do you have a Ducky Ask the Questions for this episode?
Oh, of course I do. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if we accidentally skipped over that because I don't want to, I want a chance to actually win something since it's my week here.
I do. I have a couple of questions.
Okay. I don't know if you want to do Nate's thoughts first, like his original, or I mean, he hasn't seen it, so he doesn't really have a background with this movie. But
I do not.
whatever you want to do, I'll shut up.
I'll just say, I'm ready to talk about this movie.
Okay.
I haven't wanted to talk about a movie so much after watching it in a long time. Yeah, no. Let's get into some trivia because I have some stuff to say.
All right, let's get trivial.
I'm excited.
Trivial.
That's not the song. But yeah, trivia, no. Dudes, Ducky trivia. Does ask a question. Okay.
Ducky and because, quack.
Because we watched, you know, Knowing this week for the podcast. Knowing has a wonderful cast. I mean, most importantly, Nicolas Cage. But there's a couple of great supporting actors here, including Rose Byrne and Ben Mendelsohn. Now I want to know, what other film featured these two actors, Rose Byrne and Ben Mendelsohn? We have A, Exodus, Gods and Kings, B, Mississippi Grind, C, The Place Beyond the Pines, and D, Australia. John.
I think I know the answer. I think it's Place Beyond the Pines.
Okay. Nate.
I believe it was Exodus, Gods and Kings, or whatever it was.
Gods and Kings, okay. Well, every single movie that I just mentioned has Ben Mendelsohn, but only one movie has Rose Byrne, and that movie is The Place Beyond the Pines.
Really?
She plays a character named Jennifer. I would not
Here's
have known.
Here's the thing. I did a lot of IMDb trivia, and I knew the answer. Sorry.
Okay.
But I mean, I don't like that. That doesn't
you're
mean
kind of
I.
In a way, you're kind of admitting
I,
to. A
I mean,
cheat
it is cheating, but like,
okay, you know what? I don't want to talk about this movie anymore. Goodbye.
I typically for the films that I feel like I should have knowledge about, I will take a look, but I won't do that going forward because
Fair
of
enough.
The trivia, Ducky.
But okay.
Sorry.
Well, congratulations. You won the trivia question of the week for Knowing. It was your film. You did the most research. So that's why you were the most prepared to know the answer. You know the answer for Knowing. So congratulations.
Congratulations for knowing that.
Wow, thanks. Yeah. I'm a fucking prophet, aren't I?
But if you've never heard of this film before, why don't I tell you a little bit about Knowing? Cue the theme song. This film is directed by Alex Proyas. He has done films like The Crow, iRobot, Dark City, Gods of Egypt, but we don't have to talk about that. Knowing stars Nicolas Cage, Rose Byrne, Ben Mendelsohn, and it has the film debut of Liam Hemsworth, who plays a character named Spencer. I think that's pretty damn important, but I might be a little biased. Anyways, the plot. MIT professor Nicolas Cage links a mysterious list of numbers from a time capsule to the past and future disasters and sets out to prevent the ultimate catastrophe. Has a 6.2 on IMDb, a 34% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 42% audience score, and it's got a filthy 2.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
I did not know it was that low.
Yeah,
it's pretty low. I did not know. I thought it was at least in the 50s. That is incorrect. 34 is... Yeah, there's a reason why no one is talking about this movie, and is a reason why Nate never got around to it, because it was never talked about by anybody.
I've always seen the title in video stores and stuff when I was younger. I always saw the DVD cover, just Nicolas Cage on the front with like the orange sun in the background.
Yeah.
It's kind of dark. That's it.
Shouldn't that be intriguing enough for you to be like, eh, I'll blind buy that?
Yeah, but if you walk into Walmart nowadays, like literally every other movie, Nicolas Cage is on the cover. So
yeah, like, I mean, that's fair.
I don't blame you for never checking this out because it's just like, oh yeah, could we just want another one of these VOD like shit boxes that Nicolas Cage is doing to help pay for his mother's insane asylum bill? But But because John and I had a huge history with this movie, we're kind of on the same page that it's like we recognize that it's a very out there movie. But Nate, since this is the first time you even checked this out, I didn't know anything going into this. What did you think of Knowing?
Holy shit!
Why are you putting this all on me? Like,
because I watched this as like a 13-year-old. I need to know what a 26-year-old adult feels first time seeing this fucking movie.
I'm 27, actually. Thank you very much.
Congrats. I'm almost 27 as well.
Thank you.
Did you give me my birthday present yet? No? Probably.
Yeah. So, I respect this movie more than I thought I was going to because it goes in such a bonkers direction, but it ties in to, like, some biblical shit that's, like, I'm not a churchgoer. I don't follow or practice a religion. But this movie went there and I respect it for just being like, hey, this is how we're gonna do this and this is how we're gonna tell our story. And I was like, damn, even though it's not the best movie in the world, even though some of the CG was just kind of like wow bad, I actually had a really fun time watching this movie because I like things with a little mystery and when there's a little code that has to be solved and you're kind of trying to solve it as the characters are doing it. And plus, it's Nicolas fucking Cage. Like, we've talked about it, but like, come on. He's one of the greatest ever. He just is for being who he is. And his roles are just amazing. And I guess I can only just sum this all up by saying I had a blast. No pun intended. I had a blast with this movie.
So, Spencer, you know a little bit more. You mentioned this. I didn't really know this, but apparently this pissed some Christians off.
I don't even feel comfortable commenting on that because okay. I don't follow
the director
practice
was comfortable
religion
talking
whatsoever,
about this
like at all. Like, so, I mean, I have no idea.
I can see why.
Yeah.
I can remember definitely going to the box office in 2009 for this movie, and I had already gotten a ticket. I think I was just standing in the lobby. Two other people walked in, and they asked this guy who was working the theater, like, oh, what's playing? Like, oh, what's Knowing? And I remember him saying, like, oh, are you religious? And they're like, oh, yeah, a little bit. And he's like, oh, well, you should stay clear of this movie because it will piss you off. I hated it. And I just remember hearing that and being like, what? Because I just didn't really think about it. I was like, oh, it's a movie. Nicolas Cage. It's a disaster movie. I'm going to go see it. I'm stupid. I'm ignorant. But I remember that conversation. And
ignorant.
Now, as I've gotten older, and I've like especially on this rewatch, and you see like the ending, I mean, yeah, it's about a rapture. And it has biblical elements to it, but it doesn't really like...
It's not about the Bible.
Integral to the story. It's just,
if you want to watch something that's more close to the Bible, you watch Left Behind, which is literally about the people that were left behind.
The other Nicolas Cage disaster movie about the end of the world.
I think it has a much lower Rotten Tomatoes score, but that would be the one for the Christian audience. This one, the director did not... there's a lot of symbolism here, like almost in-your-face symbolism when it comes to that type of thing. Like... It wants to be left up for interpretation. Is the film smart enough to make that decision for the audience? I don't know. But yeah, I could totally understand why a certain audience, this film is made for a certain audience, and I can understand why, religious people probably find this offensive in a sense.
I mean,
but that's not what I want to talk about with this movie right now.
Oh God, no. Yeah, that's like way beside the point.
Yeah, I know.
It's a super bleak blockbuster that is about the end of the world and the end of humanity. I mean, if you're religious, like you think of like heaven and hell and a place of afterlife, this movie doesn't really. I mean, it kind of touches doesn't care upon about it, that. But it doesn't really. Yeah, it's like no,
doesn't
like,
care.
The end
in
is
a different
the end.
Way.
And Nicolas Cage, yeah. like his character, is constantly like having his faith tested throughout the movie because he has that speech at in the MIT class, which is how like, oh yeah, nothing really exists out there. Like,
I think shit happens. Is yeah. what he says. Yeah, I just think shit happens, and then and it's like, oh. Geez.
Then he's given this like. Piece of paper that has the answers to all of the disasters in the world, including like future disasters. So like he's in a position of like, oh, I could go and prevent this. And then when he realizes he can't prevent it, then he's like, well, shit, like what was the purpose of this? So I mean, he's yeah. constantly getting his faith tested. And then, yeah, they do go there with a ballsy third act because usually the hero is trying to solve the end of the world. And the movie doesn't care about that. It's like, no, it's inevitable. Sorry.
What do you guys think about the numbers? Because with me, this is the most intriguing part of the film. I love the first and second act of this movie mainly because it's like the mystery. He receives the numbers, you know, and you're just trying to understand the true nature of them, what they mean with him as he's figuring it out. I love how they kind of piece it together. He's like heavily drinking and he's like, geez, like, And they start with 9/11. It's 2009, so it's like still in the minds of people, and that's like the first kind of disaster that he figures out. It's the date, it's the amount of people that died, and eventually you figure out that it's the locations of the disasters. Because of this movie, never forgotten the amount of people that died in 9/11. It's pretty fucked up. It just left an impression in my mind that scene in particular where he like drops his glass and he's like, oh. And he realizes what he's looking at. It's very impactful. When he realizes there's more to come.
It's in a very intriguing scene, for sure. The montage of him trying to figure out all the numbers. Because you can tell that he's just an alcoholic insomniac. Because he's just, yeah. you know, traumatized that his wife died. And then, yeah, he finds that piece of paper and he puts, like, the whiskey glass on top and has, like, that, like, circle around the numbers. And that's how he's, like, all right, what's this? It's them. Very far-fetched and, honestly...
coincidental and like yeah, it shouldn't yeah. happen type
it's
of thing
just but like it's one of those concepts that like on paper you hear that as a pitch and it's like okay like that's interesting that's cool mm-hmm.
Did you watch that yeah Spencer you watched the director comment or not the director's commentary but you watched some of the special features and they do mention that this film started with the idea of just the numbers and then EE everyone
yeah,
else
yeah yeah
That is what the film started with, and that's what they ran with. And I don't know. I just the idea of the numbers. I mean, it's represented so much on the poster. Like every promotion, all the promotional material is based on these numbers and kind of the premonition, the prophecy, and that's where it does get very biblical. But it's also just very sci-fi and fun and very popcorn. Excitement for me like it's made for that mainstream audience that just wants to go and watch a disaster movie and it does have those underlying factors but it's just so
it's
entertaining
really,
it's
really
so entertaining
not a Roland Emmerich film though that's how, kind of how I just heard that pitch
no it's more grounded
you just
kind of
pitched a Roland Emmerich movie this one has yeah. it's just more bleak than any other disaster movie I mean, maybe there's a couple other, like, The Wave was pretty fucking... Well, even that kind of has a happy ending in a sense.
It's not that bleak. I mean, it's bleak in the sense that, yeah, it's the end of the world, but there's a lot more to it with the Whisper people.
Because the action scenes are incredibly disturbing.
Yes.
The plane crash scene, like the subway scene, was like just... I wanted to look away at times. It was so brutal.
What did you think of that plane crash scene, Nate? It's all one take, people burning alive. It's one of the biggest reveals of the movie where he finds out the locations of what the numbers mean in terms of locations, and he happens to fucking be there, which is ridiculous, first of all. Like, I'm willing to admit that every time I see that scene, I'm like, oh, he's like, the numbers are locations. This location.
Literally talking to the audience.
Yeah. And then he gets out of the truck and he walks through the rain. It's absurd, but it's still like I think one of the craziest plane crash scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
It's definitely very over the top, very just out of the blue, but I liked it because you didn't know what the disaster was going to be. And I think they did a good job at kind of hinting at us what it was going to be, because when he's sitting there, it's an oil tanker that's like stuck on the middle of the road or something like that, I think.
There was another reason why they were stopped, obviously. Yeah, I don't know.
And so that's when I was like, I was expecting him to like run up to see what was going on, have it blow up.
Yeah.
And that be the thing. But then when he turns around and everyone just looks and then that plane comes, I was just like, okay.
Oh, dude.
And then it just wipes everyone out. And he's just like, oh, I can help you. No. Okay. And he just kind of drags people out haphazardly, like trying to help, but knowing there's not a lot he can do. It was very over the top, but I liked how they did it, because
they were very dedicated to that one take.
And they very needed dedicated. To put, they needed to put their main character in danger, give him some sort of risk. And they did right there. And yeah, the plane was terrifying. I think I was more disturbed by the train, because that thing plows into people and then plows into the camera. And so you're just like, the last thing you're seeing is that contact of the train hitting somebody. And I'm just like, ugh.
It's just like, it's so dark, because he knows, no one else knows. He doesn't know what's going to happen, but he knows something's going to happen in that location in the subway. And like, I will say that I'll agree with you. Obviously the CGI leaves a lot to be desired. Cause there's some scenes where like, it almost like the visual just like freezes. And like, it's weird. Like, it's just, it's obviously like just not as good as what we're used to nowadays, but I think it still works. Like, the feeling that it creates is still there. Like, you feel the darkness and the dread of the situation that he's experiencing and all these other people are experiencing. Like, when that subway just busts through a staircase and crushes like 60 people, God, I mean, it's one of the most action-packed moments of the film, and it really just kind of cements what he's trying to figure out, I guess, trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
Do you know what the guy he was chasing was running from?
Oh, because he pirated DVDs. He stole some DVDs. Right?
Yeah, and I was sitting there like, oh, okay, that's kind of clever. And then you just see the track at the bottom go to change, but then the sparks start happening.
Yeah.
And so when you think it's a guy with a bomb or something, it's actually, nope, this guy just fucked up.
Natural disaster.
And that was like the first little hint where it's like, he can't stop this no matter how hard he tries. And I thought they did a good job at making us think it was going to be above ground, because he gets there and he's talking to the cop like, you need to close this place off, blah 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 blah. And I'm sitting there like, but it's the city, could there be a subway? And then sure enough, a few minutes later, he's chasing that guy, and I was
like, smart audience member, Nate.
it's well, because there's gonna be tons of destruction above ground, like, we already know that. The movie's called Knowing. And I'm like, what disaster have we not seen yet? And I was just kind of like, oh, there's a subway. That could be more disastrous kind of thing, like more apt to happen. But I guess it was just by chance.
This is actually based off a real event too. That particular one did happen.
Oh, I'm sure.
But it was due to a subway operator that was drunk at the time. And the track did actually change like it did in the movie, but it wasn't due to an electrical malfunction. It just happened, and this guy was going too fast, and it didn't kill nearly as many people as it did in this movie, but it did kill quite a few people. But I'm wondering if you guys noticed, because the first time I realized this actual fact was when I was watching the director commentary, and I never pieced it together, but these two events that Nicolas Cage is there to witness is a direct relation to what the sun is doing the entire time and what the whole movie is trying to foreshadow and how it creates these electrical malfunctions because of these solar storms. So the sun that's literally going to fry the earth is the reason why these two events happen, because the plane falls out of the sky, the track changes. It's because of the solar storms. And I think that was so cool to kind of tie the two events that we see together into the inevitable doom of the fucking planet. And I never realized that before.
And when they show you what is happening when Nicolas Cage and Ben Mendelsohn are, they're kind of going over it, and you see the flare. I like that they showed it almost nonchalantly, just like, oh, this little flare. Yeah, this little flare is going to hit Earth. Yeah, that little flare is going to destroy humanity and the planet. And I was just like, that's creepy. Because looking at it from a computer screen, you just see a little line hit Earth.
Yeah.
In the scope of things, it's just like a grain of sand getting blown over by the wind. But that was a planet that just got, a solar system that just got destroyed. Like,
yeah.
So they did a lot of smart things for being a very over the top and out there subject. I thought they handled it pretty well. Just being able to show us these action scenes go as far as they did with like seeing the bodies and on fire and people getting crushed. It didn't hold back, and I respect it for that. And it was also, this movie was also kind of scary. I had a few shivers with the whispery people. I was like, I hope I don't see like, who's the guy? I'm sorry. The guy who led like the group with the blonde hair, he looked like Billy Idol.
And he did look like Billy Idol. That's
all I could
imagine
was him just walking up to the kids going like, in a rebel, yeah, she want more.
Like, or if I can imagine he did. It's actually Billy Idol the whole time.
If David Bowie was still alive, he would have been great in that role too.
Oh, he would have been terrifying. Yeah. But he's already played an alien.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, the Man from Nowhere. Right? Isn't that it?
Yeah. The Man Who Fell to Earth. Man,
okay, thank you.
Oh, I never saw that. So, I wanted to see that.
Yeah, so this is... One of my favorite elements to this movie is something that I always forget about until I rewatch it, and it is the horror elements, and it's especially the first act of the film with Lucinda in the school. It's creepy. It's really creepy. I mean, Lucinda's just, like, staring off into the distance, and, like, there's just whispers in, like, her ear and stuff, and, like, they're like, Lucinda, come, and then it stops, and then she's, like, watching the time capsule go down, and she's just, like, way, like... in the corner, and then all of a sudden, like, the balloon goes up and she's gone, and she's in the closet later, just like with the bloody nails. It's terrifying. And then also the scene when the little stupid son who can't act, what's his name, Caleb, is that his name?
Caleb!
Thank you. When he's laying in bed and he has the premonition, and the man is just like standing in his room and just points to the window, and like the whole world is on fire. It's a terrifying scene.
The deer comes out of the woods and it's
on
fire.
That was stupid.
Yeah.
It was silly.
That was a moose.
It's too much. It was a moose. My
big moose.
I mean, I get it that they were, you know, they had some fun with the visual effects, but
it's biblical as well. Very biblical. That moment.
It was just it's something that I really appreciate with this movie is when they do lean into the horror elements, because it is pretty creepy. I mean, you have a great director who did The Crow and Dark City, so I mean, he's used to
iRobot,
like, some dark stuff. Yeah, it's okay.
It wasn't. Sorry. Keep my wife's name. Don't you? Sorry. No, and I will agree with you, Spencer. I think the whisper people and the scenes that involve them are something that has really stuck with me over time. It's those, the creepy scenes, especially the one when they go to the cabin and there's the big reveal of EE, everyone else under the bed, and the kids are in the Ford F-150 as well.
What was the cabin again? Like, that was
her mother's?
It was
mom's
cabin.
The mom's cabin.
Lucinda's cabin that she stayed in.
Yes.
The one who originally wrote the numbers.
But it was abandoned and she died.
She died of something. Like,
she OD'd.
Was there a line of dialogue where, like, when they went to go visit it, where they're like, oh, yeah, people came to the house and, like, stayed there or something? Like, homeless people?
Rose Byrne, it was left to her, but she never visited.
I don't know, but and like just like drifters came and inhabited it. I thought she said something. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but like maybe like
I don't
those
remember
people
that.
Came and chilled out there. I don't know, because that's where they were just chilling.
Yeah, well, I think so it was I think it was just because she was unfit. She went out there, but she probably found out the sequence or knew what it was, and that's why the cabin was there. Because
yeah,
of
because
what
the
plays
numbers
out
lead
later
to
on.
There.
And
the numbers lead to the cabin.
But she might not have been able to figure out, like, with the whispers and whatnot. And I think they said she overdosed. And, like, the people came and got Rose Byrne afterwards or something. Or took her away because she was an unfit mother. And then, yeah, the mother OD'd, and yeah, like you said, it was left to her, but she never came.
Yeah, so, and the story with Lucinda, it's so unsettling, and like especially the scene you mentioned, Spencer, when she's kind of just standing there with the balloon, and that whole opening sequence really does kind of set the tone for the mystery of the movie, kind of the just the overall unsettling nature and the just the mystery behind the Whisper People, who I guess for the longest time I really looked at as aliens. But when you really look at this movie from an outside's perspective, you see all the kind of underlying biblical elements. Like, they could be aliens, they could be angels.
It never
angels.
Takes a stance. It leaves it for interpretation, for sure.
And that was purposeful, for sure.
Well, I went to Aliens too. Like, I guess we're probably getting into spoiler territory, but it came out in
2009.
Oh,
we've spoiled the movie already many times.
Yeah. Knowing them, fuck you. Go ahead.
Yeah,
but
why,
like,
are you listening to this? Yeah.
You have the ships and whatnot, so that kind of hints at the extraterrestrial life. When the whispering people kind of shed their skin and they're those beings, like, almost from Annihilation, that kind of look.
Yeah, interesting, yeah.
You see wings, kind of.
They do
over
show
their shoulders.
Wings.
Yeah. But if you guys ever look this up, I don't know if you ever have, but I've been really interested in it since watching this movie. Have you ever looked up what biblical accurate angels really look like?
Aren't they fucking scary?
They're terrifying. And when I saw the ship, that's all I was thinking, was like intertwined black rings. And
the ship is, it's similar to the, you know, the image that, what's the little daughter's name? I forget now.
Abby.
So she draws that image, which is like imprinted in her mind because we've seen the image before in the film, but it's basically this like Dyson sphere around the sun. And the ship itself is very reminiscent of an actual Dyson sphere, which is basically this like just this futuristic device that an advanced civilization would make around the sun to harness all of its energy. And that's kind of what it looks like. The ship is kind of modeled after,
like, yeah, with a star or something.
No, exactly. And that's what I look at these aliens or angels, and the fact is they're so advanced that they may as well be angels to Nicolas Cage's character. And that's like when he's dropping down and he's just like, he sees what he's seeing. It's like, it's for a third act that is a little bit kind of bumpy. That part of the movie really works for me because it's like he, as a character, has come full circle. His father's a pastor. Like, he has this conflicting science versus religion, and he sees this, and it's almost like he's put in his place where he sees this almost just like this unbelievable ship where it might as well be like a biblical thing where like these are creators because they're so advanced that they still could be aliens, but they're almost godlike figures to him. So it's almost both is what I'm trying to say.
And I've started thinking about stuff like that differently because we're always in the mindset that when we see something so like extraterrestrial or anything like that, that we're supposed to understand.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're supposed to know what's going on. But actually watching this, I kind of put that all in the back burner and was just like, you know why Nicolas Cage doesn't understand? Because it's not supposed to make sense.
Yeah.
In their world, it makes sense. You see it all, just how the ship transforms and when all the extraterrestrial stones like levitate.
Yes.
And just being able to like suspend the disbelief and be like, God, this doesn't make sense, but it doesn't need to, I guess, because we would never really understand something like that to its fullest extent, and we never will. We'll be long gone.
Look at it from their perspective of like a mosquito seeing us, and I think that's where what I see like Nicolas Cage is like he is like that little mosquito seeing this like massive ship that defies logic and the physics that he knows. And that's where it's like that's almost the otherworldly beings that he's seeing, where there's just absolute disbelief on his face in that moment where he doesn't know what to think. All he's learned in his entire life, all his beliefs of like, oh, shit just happens, is kind of out the window It's like he just doesn't know what to think in that moment.
Instead of him having the feeling of disbelief, he already didn't believe in the first place. So I actually think this is kind of a reverse where he sees all this and he's like, oh my God, I thought this was all for nothing, but for someone, it's going to continue. So he kind of has a revelation.
Yeah.
And then like when he sees his dad and whatnot, I was kind of like, good. That's what needed to happen. But I want to hear what Spencer was going to say.
Yeah, go ahead, buddy.
He was ready. He was ready.
No, it's... It kills me in that scene so much because the kid is just not a good actor, and he yeah. literally comes up to the Nicolas Cage at their last moment together as father and son. It's literally the scene where Nicolas Cage has to say goodbye to his son. Like, I mean, he spent the whole movie trying to protect his son, and the only way to protect his son and to save him is to let him go. That's now the scene and where this happens, and the son is just, hey, don't be scared of the other people. He gave me a bunny rabbit. They said I could take it. I'm going to go to the other world with Abby. It's going to be great. Don't cry, Dad. I'm okay. It's like, oh my God. Pluck his eyes out right now.
Yeah, I get it.
I think it was purposeful in a way. Like, obviously the kid, wasn't that great of an actor at all. But in a way, he's been hearing all this information from something that Nicolas Cage can't hear. And so maybe the son knows. He knows what the future holds. He knows what's going to happen. So he
wrote
kinda
the numbers
has,
himself.
So he kind of can be more relieved. I think he's just more upset because he genuinely loves his dad and his dad genuinely loves him. And so that's more of what he's kind of upset about when he's like, no, I don't want to leave you. And then Nicolas Cage lets him go. But they're whispering to him. And I can just imagine the things that they've told him. And so, yeah, he probably doesn't want to leave his dad. But he understands, maybe, what is happening. And so he's a little less. But it still doesn't take away the fact that when he was getting mad at Nicolas Cage, it almost looked like he just had a monotone look on his face. Like, he had a hard time expressing emotion. I guess, if that makes any sense.
I like what you're saying. In that moment, after everything he's been whispered to almost for three quarters of the film at that point. So he, at that point, is almost like becoming one of those higher beings in terms of the information that he knows. So the mm-hmm. reason why he's acting that way, if I'm not going to shit on his performance, like, you could be right. There's a reason behind why he's acting the way that he is, because he has all this information and he's almost above the human race at that point, where he's just gonna kind of be like, yeah, we gotta go, just kind of like how the aliens were acting, or the angels, or whatever you want to call them.
I definitely appreciate where you guys are coming from. I like what I like what you guys have to say. It makes a lot of sense. My only counter is just that his performance is consistent throughout the whole movie like that.
Yeah.
From
no,
the
I get
first
that.
Scene.
I get
it's
that.
Like, oh, this kid is a little
very
miscast.
Good point.
But yeah, it's okay. No. He's no Haley Joel Osment. You know, he's no, what's his
name? Is that the only good
Night
child
Hunter,
performance you can
Jacob
think
Tremblay.
Of, Spencer?
I was trying to think of the guy who we just talked about. Yeah.
Jacob
Night
Tremblay.
Hunter, who played John, who was the lead.
Oh, John.
What was his name, though?
The kid, Billy Chapin.
Thank you. Yeah.
Another thing I want to mention about the end of the film, there's a shot where Nicolas Cage, it's the scene where we see Ben Mendelsohn just kind of standing on the side of the road. In the scene where there's a million extras just kind of like rioting and breaking shit, and he's driving his F-150 through the streets of Boston. We don't see a single child. There's not a kid. They're all adults.
They all... Never
so,
mind. I was going to go somewhere really dark, but then I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
No, and I think this is another thing I never noticed before, but through the director's commentary, this was mentioned, and I was like, wow, I never realized that. I think that they took every child off the plane.
Well, there is a wide shot, or maybe not a wide shot, but there's a shot from outer space of like those...
All the kids, the kids are leaving.
Like the spaceships are going up, and there's just so many of them from all across the world. So there's just multiple people that are being brought up to this new utopia. And
maybe it's not
all,
every kid, but it's they're taking a vast majority of the young human race.
Like, at least 15, 20 that you could see on screen, like, but like maybe there was more, but
it's like Noah's Ark. You got to take one of each to rebuild a new life.
Sure.
So maybe that's kind of,
I think the idea is though, they're taking the younger generation. Maybe they don't take them all, but we do not see any kids in that shot, which is,
it's like Adam and Eve. There, I said it.
Yeah. So are they taking
life? They weren't holding a kid when they were embracing together. They weren't.
I think they were holding each other.
They were. There's no kids. Yeah. There's no kids in the riots. So, and
to look for.
That's purposeful.
Director's commentary. Is that what you learned or something?
Yes. There's no kids. So basically, in the director's commentary, he's talking to another person who's like giving him questions throughout. It's another guy. I don't know who it is, but he brings up that question, and the director kind of just, you know, tiptoes around it. But it's because it's supposed to be up for interpretation and this and that. But it's a really good point where, you know, maybe they do take all the kids because of the innocence, and they're not like crazy like the adults who are just going to riot in a situation like this. Because it's easier to get through to children. That's why they whisper to them. There's a lot here. I mean, there's a lot that you could kind of decipher through that, but I have come to the conclusion that I do think that maybe they didn't take all the children, but they took, at least in that shot, it's like, okay, they took, you know, 30 children, but maybe there's a million more ships, who knows?
Yeah, because not all the kids at the elementary school hear it. Like, it was just Lucinda at the beginning, and then it was only Abby and Caleb,
but they weren't even
at the same school.
Who's to say that all the kids didn't? Because those are the only kids we see throughout the entire film other than in the 50s.
I feel like if it was more kids like that, you would have seen other kids.
The young actress that plays Lucinda also played Abby. And like, I totally can see it now.
I didn't realize that.
I mean, when I was watching the film, because they're such polar opposite characters. Like, Lucinda was terrifying. Like, I was actually
scared of her. With some CGI, probably. Because they did look lot like Rose Byrne in some of the pictures.
Oh my God,
like the way they.
Rose Byrne looked like she was like 19 in this movie.
Like, oh, but she's beautiful.
She was so creepy in this movie. She was. Like,
well,
honestly.
Think about it, though.
Creepy?
I mean, her character, her whole life, her mother was literally saying,
dead.
You're going to die on October 19th or whatever the date was. Like, literally saying, like, hey, you're going to die on this day. And, like, just saying, like, oh, yeah, like, I know the world's going to die. Like, everything ends. And she just chose to ignore it her whole life. And now it's being proved that it is real and that her mom was telling the truth. Like, that's a lot for her character to go through. So, give Rose Byrne some slack.
And she doesn't even go with all of them.
She doesn't. And I have a few, I guess now that I think of this, I'm like, this is a MacGuffin. The rocks are never explained.
It's just to show that they're from not here, because it's explained at the end, because all of the rocks are in that spot.
Nope.
Where Nicolas Cage drives on top of them and you hear the rocks that he pulls onto.
It's just unearthly, kind of, right?
Yeah. Nope. And then when the ship goes, they all kind of levitate.
Does Spencer know what the rocks are for?
Nope. Not of planet Earth. Nope.
Oh,
you're revealing a lot about this other movie that I...
I don't know, maybe.
Oh, not
of, okay. I swear to God, if they actually explain that that's what nope means in that movie, I'm going to be a little bit annoyed.
Maybe, I don't know. Not of planet Earth.
Not our people.
God, they're trying to be too smart. No, that's the one thing where it's like, I can't figure that out. And also the fucking rabbits. Why the rabbits? You could have given them a gerbil. Like,
because
it doesn't matter.
Rabbits are known to breed really quickly, and they're going to go to a different planet to essentially breed. And they want
them 11.
To breed like rabbits. John, it's Alex Proyas, okay? We don't know much about him on a personal level. He hasn't directed a movie since Gods of Egypt. So
I know in 2014.
It's implied.
He didn't direct a movie between Knowing and Gods of Egypt. I feel like that's worth mentioning as well. That was he had no projects for about 6 years in between those movies. He's not Spike Jonze, okay? He made Knowing, iRobot, The Crow, which, okay, and then Gods of Egypt.
He also made Dark City.
What do you guys think of Nicolas Cage's character arc? I mean, the same thing can be said for Rose Byrne, but their entire purpose is to protect their children, especially Rose Byrne in those final moments. We have to protect the children!
So one of my favorite scenes of this movie was them on the rooftop in Boston after he confronts them at the museum. And
Joey King's there just like going on dates.
Nicolas Cage knows. Sorry. I mean, the movie's called Knowing. He knows, okay? And he just wants to just tell Rose Byrne everything that he knows. And she just doesn't want to hear it. And you can just tell his, like, he's so frustrated. And, like, you can tell that he's about to, like, burn out like that, like, Mandy level of Nicolas Cage, the freak out, like, scream in your underwear and, like, just, like, throw a temper tantrum for 10 minutes, like, in one take. And, like, he wants to do it so bad, and it's just so entertaining. And I guess in the special features, they talk about that scene in particular, and I guess they rehearsed it in a very, like, traditional way. And then when they called action, Nicolas Cage just brought up this, like, extra, like, energy element to it of, like, just, like, hyperventilating, like, I need to tell you this right now, and you need to listen because this is what's happening. You need to fucking shut up!
I watched that too, and I think you can see Rose Byrne's reaction in the film, and the way that she's like, you need to get away from me and leave me the fuck alone, and that's exactly how she felt legitimately in real life in that moment. And that is one of those scenes where Nicolas Cage gets to be Nicolas Cage, and those are some of the best moments. It's like, at this point, since we've seen so much Nicolas Cage, like, it's almost laughable because you're like, okay, this is him being him. But it works in the film. It really does, because he just, you know,
Caleb!
I just like that it's gradually let him go there, because in the beginning he's just like, hey, I'm making Papa's famous Sunday hot dogs. I'm Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. I'm the son of a pastor. Sorry.
You want to come see Saturn's rings, son?
I love this movie. I kind of
low-key do, too.
That's the thing. It's, again, guilty pleasure. It was this or The Mummy, and I feel like I'm definitely more passionate about this movie than The Mummy. The Mummy's great. Brendan Fraser, like, how can you go wrong? We're not talking about it. I'm just saying it was against this movie. It's two movies that I, you know, would love to talk about, and I think this movie made for a great conversation piece. There's so many elements and so many just,
so
I guess, over-the-top funny moments. Like, it's crazy. I think, it really is. I mean, this movie.
I've loaded up all of the negative reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and it looks like a huge consensus is that just people don't really dig or the critics didn't really dig the over-the-top setup, the over-the-top punchline. They say that one critic just says, I was dozing off, and gave it an F. They say that it just falls apart in the third act. It's very bleak.
But they're dissing it based on only, like, one thing. Well, we can actually talk about the bad
things. I've seen the movie
10
fucking times.
Knowing has some interesting ideas and a couple good scenes, but it's weighted down by its absurd plot and over-seriousness.
I could see that, but I guess...
It's over-serious. It's not really fun. I mean, I know you said that.
No, but it's fun.
I had fun just allowing Nicolas Cage to just literally just kind of let loose and just be like, hey, I'm this single alcoholic dad, and I'm just going to be over the top and go, Caleb!
I'm the son of a pastor. I'm going to keep doing that. Is that cool?
Hi, I'm Nicolas Cage. I'm the son of a pastor.
The next movie on his IMDb is called Son of a Pastor.
Yep, exactly.
Written by those movie dudes.
Yes.
He would do it.
Sorry, Martin the Monkey. Yeah.
Just get him $1 million.
Yeah, I could keep going. I really could with this movie, but we should probably cut this off here. Spencer, final thoughts.
One second. I want to see what I gave it on Letterboxd. And maybe I have an old review. I don't know.
I don't know if I put my grade in yet. I think
I'm pretty
I did.
Sure
I didn't re-log it.
Let me check. I did.
Okay. So, yeah, no, I mean, it is one of those movies that I checked out in theaters back in 2009, and it has stuck with me over time of just the fact of, like, yeah, like the numbers and predicting the future and just Nicolas Cage kind of getting there with his over-the-top performance and just the ending really going there and being kind of bleak and being very just different for, like, a mainstream blockbuster to just have this very bold ending. So it's something that I do kind of appreciate. I do get the criticisms. I mean, it is a very dark and serious blockbuster. It doesn't really have too much fun with its material. The action scenes, like we said, are very disturbing to watch. I mean, people are on fire and burning to death, just innocent people. It's like, okay, in the subway, yeah. people just get executed just horrifically. But that being said, I do really like the horror elements. I do think it's well directed. I do have fun with the Nicolas Cage element to the movie. Like we said, like no other actor could replace Nicolas Cage in this lead performance. I got the Blu-ray now. I didn't before this, but now I have the Blu-ray. So
don't
at least I can watch Knowing whenever I would like to in the future. So I am going to go. I'm going to go. Fuck. I don't know.
Just be honest. Okay. Remember when we made our list back in the day, it's entertainment factor. That's what I always keep in mind. This is a movie that I was entertained by. What is the entertainment factor grade on this film?
If you sit down on like a Saturday night at like 9 p.m. with a couple of beers and you watch Knowing, you might have a good time. It? So I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5.
Fuck yeah. Let's go.
It was either that or a 3. So it was, yeah.
It's a 3.5 with a beer in your system.
It's a 3.5. It's closer to a 3 than a 4. I'll go that way. Okay.
All right. Man, fuck off. What?
Oh, my God.
Where are we at, Nate?
Well, John, you are also probably going to get really pumped because I had a blast. And I know this, there's, of course, the CGI is kind of iffy, very over the top. It just went there and it accepted it. And I like a disaster movie that actually depicts the world ending. It's kind of refreshing because we're so used to superheroes saving the world, coming out unscathed. Well, it's like, ah, we're fucked. Like, I don't know, it's like a weird cathartic release that I get seeing that world just crumble. I'm gonna go 4 out of 5 as far as enjoyment because I did have fun and like I understand its flaws, but fuck it. We're not critics, we're film lovers.
It's 2009.
We don't have to hold ourselves to a standard. I had fun and I love Rose Byrne and I love Nicolas Cage.
I'm so happy we've got to talk about a movie like this because we're always talking about, oh, this movie's so critically acclaimed, it won 16 fucking 20 Oscars. Like, no, this movie isn't that, but it's a movie that it has a place in my heart. For me, it's just so entertaining. No, it's not amazing, but it's one of those disaster flicks that I feel like the vast majority of people have not seen. It does its own thing. It doesn't do the typical like Asteroid Impact. It goes for this weird sun flare thing that is completely, this would not happen. The Earth would not be fried. Okay. It would fuck all communications and fuck our satellites for probably a decade at the very least, but we would not be fried because we have an ozone layer. Okay. It's just not realistic. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a scientist, but I've watched a lot of scientific videos. This is not possible.
Well, you got to think our Earth is being protected by this atmosphere that is, we understand what makes it, but we also don't know what out there is made of. So the whole biochemistry and everything on Earth combining with the unknown elements and dark matter of space, it's a plausible thing that could happen.
We're those science dudes, by the way. We are those science dudes. It's Nick Cage.
It's a fucking movie.
If you've ever watched, you've ever seen a podcast with us, I love Nick Cage. Rose Byrne is over the top. Everything's over the top in this movie, but it's just so entertaining. It's so just like, it is, it's horrific. It's scary. There's so many elements that I love and God, I'm going to watch this movie at least 10 more times before I die. It's great. It's good. I'm going to go 4 out of 5. It's a 4 out of 5. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I'm sitting here saying, like, I know it has its flaws. Like, there's problems with this movie, but it's so entertaining. And when I say I love it, it doesn't mean it's a perfect movie. I love this movie, but it's not great.
That's fine. I okay? love Porky's.
All right. Porky's, I haven't seen Porky's. The there you go.
We all like this movie.
It's, okay. It's good! Caleb! The games won't save us! Nothing can!
the radiation will penetrate 1 mile into the Earth's crust.
The super flavor in our own solar system, 100 microtesla wave of radiation that would destroy our ozone layer, killing every leg of... God, I can't do it. I can't deliver a line like Nicolas Cage. I can't do it.
Yeah, so yeah, Movie-thon, if you have seen Knowing, let us know what you think of this film. Anyone else listening as well, yeah, just go to our Instagram at those movie dudes. Like the photo of Knowing, hopefully, as I say this, hopefully I commit to my photo idea of it. So go ahead and give it a like.
If you don't, I'm really disappointed, dude.
And yeah.
Oh, leave him alone. It's 9 o'clock at night.
Movie-thon in particular, I want to know your thoughts. Have you seen Knowing? If not, watch it. It's on Hulu or Amazon Prime, and then go back and listen to this podcast. Yeah.
You bastard. Let's get fit.